Is that the best one?
Let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody who's in this meeting. I hope that all members feel much more energetic after the hectic work they were doing in KZN. More energetic and sharper than before. Okay. Yes. Has everybody settled?
I think so.
Yes. At this stage, I won't make too much of remarks, but to welcome the minister and the delegation and say that we will give you, minister, only, I'm not sure how many documents you are presenting, but I will give you 30 minutes to make your presentation, so that members can be able to effectively interact with your presentation. Yes. And let me also bring to the attention of the committee that the minister, we will release him in 20 or 30 minutes' time for her to be able to join a cabinet meeting. And the deputy minister has also sent her apology that she will be late for the meeting if she's able to join us, because she's attending another meeting too. I'm sure the members will accept those two apologies. Okay.
I just want to respond and say, Minister, we will release you, because this department, you have been with us, you come into our meetings, and we must say today that we really appreciate that. And we see no reason why we shouldn't release you when there is a need. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chen Swift. Thanks, Mebrot. Let me take this opportunity to hand over to the minister and the team from the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I don't want to take much time. But what is important is that we've come to present our report to you, and that also to say that ours right now is to focus on implementation, because during the 15 past years of the democratic government, we're busy with policy formulation. So what we're trying to strengthen now is implementation and also monitoring and evaluation, and also to try and streamline our work according to the government outcomes. So we're going to present our reports to you. I'm not going to waste time, because I would like to hear the first questions that are going to come up from members of the committee, and then I can leave after we respond to the first set of questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, and good morning to members of the committee. Our Director, Monitoring and Evaluation, responsible for developing our annual reports, will be giving the presentation today. His name is Mr. Chris Malawit.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, honourable members of the House, the Director General, and colleagues. 30 minutes is a very short time for this kind of presentation. It's going to be three of us. Going to be three of us presenting. I'll present the non-financial part, and the team from finance will focus on the non-financial bits. So, given the very limited time that we have, I will not go too much into the details around our mission and vision, which are things that are well known to yourselves. I will also, if you don't mind, not really go into each of the strategic priorities we have, but just to say, our programs are informed by these priorities, as well as the 12 government-wide outcomes that were adopted by the presidency a year or so ago. So as you are aware, we have five programs. During that time, we had about five programs, which are Program 1, Administration; Program 2, Comprehensive Social Security; Program 3, Policy Development Review and Implementation Support for Welfare Services; Program 4, Community Development; and Program 5, Strategy and Governance. So we shall now move to Program Part B, which is Program Performance. Okay, I'll be moving a bit fast, so I'll mention the slide number so that you be able to, in instances where I think, there's too much detail in this. So in instances where I believe there's too much detail, I'll simply skip and tell you which slide I'm on. And I hope you will indulge me on that particular one. So we start with Program 2, Comprehensive Social Security, which seeks to contribute to the goal of reducing income poverty among the poor and vulnerable South Africans. So our achievements in that regard were that during the year under review, we sought to extend the CSD to children aged 16 and 17. And our achievement in that regard was that the total number of children between the ages of 16 and 17 receiving the CSG by the end of March was more than 323,000, bringing to more than 10.3 million the total number of CSG recipients by the end of that period as well. We sought to equalize the age to ensure that males aged 16 receive the older persons grant as well. During that time, what that basically means is that the third and final phase of the age equalization for the receipt of grants between male and women entered its final phase, basically. And during that time, more than 283,000 men aged 60 and above were in receipt of the older persons grant, bringing to over 2.6 million the total number of older persons benefiting from our social assistance program. We have sought to have a draft social assistance bill, amendment bill, by the end of the year. We introduced the draft bill in Parliament, and Parliament referred part of the bill back to Cabinet for reconsideration. We also obtained a legal opinion on the implementation of the harmonized assessment tool for disability without the definition of disability. A consultative process on regulating the harmonized assessment tool will be conducted in the next financial year. With respect to the development of an assessment tool for children with disabilities and health care needs, we completed a draft policy for children with disabilities and health care needs, and the draft policy will be consulted and costed in the next financial year, which is the current year, 2011-2012. With respect to the introduction of a consolidated policy and legislation on social relief, BINMEC and the Social Protection Cluster approved the policy and bill for submission to Cabinet, and both will be submitted in the next financial year before being introduced in Parliament. With respect to the policy on monetary retirement provisions, that policy was approved by the Interministerial Committee on Social Security in February 2011, and we completed a draft blueprint for a revised social security institutional framework and presented it to decision-making structures in the department. We also completed a draft blueprint and presented to MANCO and Interdepartmental Task Team on Social Security. That's the draft blueprint for a National Social Security Fund. The slide 14 basically just talks about the number of people who are benefiting from our social assistance program. That's just a detail that we thought you may need to know about. We move now to the appeals tribunal. We sought to establish a system of adjudicating social assistance appeals, which will contribute to outcome 7, vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities with food security for all. We are sought to adjudicate all lodged appeals, which will be prioritized according to the first-in, first-out principle. We adjudicated about 41,162 appeals that were part of the backlog. And in addition to that, we adjudicated and finalized over 4,000 new appeals. With respect to the operationalization of regionally based appeal education structures and capabilities, we finalized and submitted the organizational structure to the Minister for approval, and we appointed and secured offices for staff in Gauteng, Free State, Northwest, Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. By the end of the year, we were finalizing the vetting and verification of qualifications for enlistment of provincial panel members. We also developed a project to reconcile information and databases, all regional offices, and verified data. We captured all verified data This was meant to operationalize the regionally based bulk volume capturing processes and build appropriate regional data warehouses. We are on slide 16. We are moving to program 3, social welfare services. The goal that we seek to realize is to support and strengthen family and community interventions that foster social cohesion, which will also contribute in part to the realization of outcome trials, which is an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. We sought to implement the recruitment and retention strategy for social service professionals. In that respect, we awarded scholarships to 5,574 students to enable them to register for social work courses at several institutions for higher learning in the country, which we believe will go a long way towards addressing the shortage of social service professionals in the country. Over 1,177 social work students who had graduated and were absorbed into implementing in the various provinces. With respect to welfare service transformation, we sought to complete a situational analysis of community-based care services. We completed the analysis in four provinces, namely Free State, Northern Cape, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. With respect to the auditing of intergenerational programs, we developed two intergenerational programs in KwaZulu-Natal, and 70 clients participated in the program as well. We sought to develop a South African plan of action, guidelines on aging for the implementation, and a monitoring tool for the plan of action on aging. We completed the guidelines for implementing the South African plan of action as well, on aging as well. With respect to developing an amalgamated DRD policy on disability and to ensure that it's aligned with the UN Convention, we finalized that policy as well. We refined a draft framework on management and promotion of human rights through internal conferences for workshops with key stakeholders as well. We have sought also to reorient and train social service professionals on the legislative framework on human rights. In this respect, we trained over 628 officials on the promotion of Access to Justice Act PAJA, and as well as 1,891 social service professionals on the legislative framework on human rights. We have sought to develop a draft policy on social service professions. We developed a policy on social service professions as well, and the policy was ready for consultation by the end of the financial year. I'll move a bit quick to the bottom, which is we sought to refine a draft policy on provision of social service professions. The policy was consolidated into a reviewed policy on financial awards. We now move to children under the same program. Our goal is to invest in and ensure the provision of sound social welfare services to children, including those in need of care and protection. And this we believe will also enable us to contribute to the realization of outcome 3, which is that all people in South Africa are and feel safe. We sought to implement the Child Protection Register, and we implemented Parts A and B of the Child Protection Register according to the Children's Act. Cases on abuse, neglect, and exploitation on the Child Protection Register and Children's Court provided court outcomes and convictions in the following manner. 1,173 abuse cases were recorded on the register, that is Part A of the register. 64 convictions were received and recorded as well, while 9 Children's Court findings were recorded on Part A of the CTR. With respect to Part B, 1 case of unsuitability was recorded. We also recorded 85 inquiries by individuals, as well as 710 inquiries by employers, and 9 database entries of forums as well. We're now on slide 21, which continues with children. We thought to develop programs for preventing child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. In that respect, we assessed 20 child abuse prevention and early intervention programs. We completed a report on findings, conceptual framework, practical guidelines, and recommendations for scaling up child abuse prevention and early programs. We sought to complete a pilot study on the National Surveillance Study on Child Abuse, Exploitation and Neglect. We've completed the first phase of the study, and we developed a conceptual framework and methodology report for the national surveillance on child abuse, exploitation and neglect. We also developed a transformation strategy for children and youth care centers. We identified provinces Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape for the implementation of a cluster foster care models for the pilot of a cluster foster care models. The Children's Act came into force on the 1st of April 2010 and was launched by the President in May of the same year. We facilitated the implementation of the Act, and numerous activities were undertaken, which include the development of frequently asked questions, the implementation matrix, and 7 provincial visits, with the exception of Northern Cape and Western Cape. We have finalized a high-level norms and standard practice guidelines for the Children's Act and distributed it to all provinces for implementation. We conducted capacity buildings on norms and standards for the implementation of the Children's Act, and as well as conducting visits to 9 provinces and capacitating over 800 people, including service providers, on the implementation of the Act. We also start to implement a strategy for orphans and vulnerable children, including those working and living on the streets. We conducted 3 provincial visits to determine implementation, the implementation of the strategy. The provinces in question are Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal. We also sought to approve a policy framework and guideline for providing statutory services to child-headed households. In that respect, that policy, the guideline was approved, and policy framework on statutory services to children child-headed households was also finalized. We developed a final strategy on services to orphans and vulnerable children in drop-in centers as well. With respect to adoptions, we registered 2,236 national adoptions. We registered 200 inter-county adoptions, and we capacitated 500 staff from 8 provinces, excluding Northern Cape, on practice guidelines on inter-county adoptions. We evaluated and recommended 23 adoption service providers for accreditation on the national and on national and inter-country adoptions. With respect to the implementation of international social service programs, we capacitated 500 staff from 8 provinces, excluding Northern Cape once again, on the international social services. We capacitated 500 staff from 8 provinces, again excluding Northern Cape, on the management of unaccompanied minor children. We sought to develop a partial care strategy for children. In that respect, we developed a draft partial care strategy for children. We also sought, I'll skip the next one, we also sought to audit and also conduct an audit of partial care and ECD programs. We completed the audit in 4 provinces, namely Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Gauteng. We sought to finalize a draft green paper on families. This was finalized and presented to cabinet. The Green Paper seeks to promote and strengthen family life through a coherent, well-coordinated framework for all government policies, programs, and civil society initiatives. My colleagues will elaborate a bit on progress in that regard, because much have happened after in the last few months, the last 2 months really, on this particular one. We sought approval for the integrated plan for services to families. That was approved and finalized. As well as, we also developed, consulted on a draft integrated parenting framework with key stakeholders. We also try to build capacity for implementation of programs that aim to strengthen and develop families. We capacitated 81 service providers on the manual for families in crisis in 3 provinces, namely Northern Cape, Western Cape, and Gauteng. We also capacitated 54 service providers on the implementation of the BSD strategy for families in 2 provinces, namely KwaZulu-Natal and Free State. I will now move to, to the next slide, which is slide 38. We move now to social crime prevention, but the sub-program there being the fight against substance abuse. Our goal is to reduce substance abuse and contribute to an improved substance abuse services and program, as well as outcome 1-2, which is a long and healthy life for all South Africans. With respect to the rollout of the anti-drugs and alcohol program in provinces, we commemorated the International Day Against Drug Abuse and Illicit Trafficking in the Eastern Cape. We held successful second biennial anti-substance abuse summit, which we held in KwaZulu-Natal in March of this year. And the National Action Plan has since been approved by Cabinet to put into action new measures to address the scourge of substance abuse in our country. We also conducted door-to-door campaigns in all provinces except KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, and held a number of anti-drug and alcohol initiatives in Free State, Gauteng, Northern Cape, and Limpopo. We sought to finalize regulations of the prevention of and treatment for, or regulations under, rather, the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act. We finalized draft regulations under that Act, and the regulations were taken for consultation in all 9 provinces. With respect to the implementation of best practice models for combating substance abuse and abuse, we implemented the aftercare and reintegration model in the Western Cape and Mpumalanga provinces. We implemented the community-based model in Northern Cape, in Limpopo, sorry, and Northwest. We also approved substance abuse prevention model for adults, as well as developing a draft treatment model. Still under social crime prevention, we reviewed, we finalized the National Drug Master Plan. We conducted a need assessment among support structures, and the report is available. We established and maintained 238 local drug action committees and strengthened and maintained 9 provincial substance abuse forums. This speaks to the target of strengthening and supporting institutional mechanisms for implementing the National Drug Master Plan. With respect to the approval of a social crime prevention strategy, the Head of Social Services approved the social crime prevention strategy in February 2011. We also developed 5 social crime prevention programs. With respect to regulations under the Probation Services Act, we drafted draft regulations under the Probation Services Act. You'll realize I skipped two issues there. I now move to slide 32, which talks to social crime prevention still. We sought to reduce the risk of sexual and physical violence against women, or rather what is also known as gender-based violence, which we believe will contribute to the realization of an improved victim support service. We sought to implement men and boys strategy on the prevention of gender-based violence. In that respect, we trained about 270 social workers to implement the strategy to engage men and boys in the prevention of gender-based violence in all 9 provinces. We sought to implement a shelter strategy for abused women and children. We trained 270 social workers to implement the shelter strategy for abused women and children in all 9 provinces. We also sought to develop and roll out the human trafficking program in all provinces. We developed and implemented the human trafficking rehabilitation program in 13 identified shelters in all 9 provinces. With respect to the victim empowerment legislation, research support, we conducted research on the feasibility of developing a victim support services legislation, and the research report is in place, and which provides the basis for developing VEP legislation. With respect to the development of a costing model for victim empowerment programs, we developed the costing model. We also successfully piloted generic set of indicators, tools, in Limpopo, Gauteng, Northwest provinces. We also presented preliminary findings at the VEP conference, which was held in October 2010. We compiled an analysis pilot site report, and this talks to the target of piloting generic indicator set at site level in 3 provinces. With respect to the development or to the design of a register or database of victims of crime and violence, we developed a prototype framework to capture data for victims of crime and violence and trained cluster departments on capturing of such data. We had sought to design and test an independent victim satisfaction survey. We designed the victim satisfaction survey instruments and tested them in 4 sites, namely Truzella Center, the Center of Abused Women, SAPC Victim Support Service Centers, and as well as the Parole Board. We are now done with Program 3. We are moving now to Program 4, Community Development. We will start with the sub-program HIV and AIDS, through which we sought to realize the outcome of competent communities and stakeholders that deal effectively with prevention and the psychological impact of HIV and AIDS. We have sought to train staff in all provinces to implement social behavior change programs. In that respect, we conducted consultative workshops for youth in 3 provinces, namely the 3 states, Northwest and KwaZulu-Natal. We conducted 2 community dialogues with 2 communities as well and hosted the World AIDS Day successfully. We sought to assess the impact of Love Life programs. In that respect, we developed terms of reference for the impact assessment and also presented those to sector meetings and things. With respect to the interdepartmental committee to manage love life programs, the approval of an interdepartmental committee to manage love life programs, we approved the management plan to monitor love life programs in all provinces, or rather in provinces. We have sought to implement the National Action Plan for orphans and other children made vulnerable by HIV and AIDS. In that respect, we compiled and presented a draft report on the monitoring evaluation capacity of the national NGOs to the National Action Committee for Children Affected by HIV and AIDS. We also developed a draft National Action Committee for Children Affected by HIV and AIDS communication strategy. We developed a draft conceptual framework on psychosocial support for orphans and other children affected by HIV and AIDS. We revised the MNE framework for the National Action Plan and refined and finalized the National Action Plan indicators as well. We sought to ensure that 10% of municipalities would utilize the maternal offence database by the end of the reporting period. In that respect, the Minister launched the maternal offence surveillance system in KZN in an area known as Umzinyati. With respect to the target of 10%, we actually ensured that we exceeded the target to the extent that 12.7%, that is 36 out of 280 municipalities, were utilizing the database for planning purposes. That is 22 of them were in the Northwest, and four of them in KwaZulu-Natal, while 10 such municipalities were in the Free State. We sought to analyze the research findings and data on children affected by HIV and AIDS. We disseminated HCDC audit findings among all relevant stakeholders, and we developed provincial strategies to address audit gaps and challenges in all provinces. We have sought to ensure that 35 districts would implement the monitoring and evaluation system for HCDC. We implemented the system in 31 districts. The remaining four, namely the West Rand, City of Johannesburg, Citibank, and Musading, could not get the system implemented since the Gauteng province was not yet ready by the end of the financial year. We have sought to train about 15,000 caregivers to strengthen home community-based care organizations. In that respect, we trained almost 20,000 community caregivers and an additional 1,000 community caregivers on psychosocial well-being skills development program. We developed and evaluated a curriculum for child protection skills program. We registered accreditation of psychosocial well-being skills development program with the WHCETA. We have sought to ensure that 30% of HCBC organizations comply with norms and standards set for them. Over 47% such organizations, that is 650 out of 14,000, which are very funded organizations, complied with the norms and standards for HCBC management. We sought to develop a skills development program for community development practitioners. We have now moved to a sub-program known as Community Policy and Service Standards, which is slide 39. We have sought to develop a skills development plan for community development practitioners. In that respect, we developed and approved the community development skills plan, and Head of Social Development approved the community development policy framework as well, and we developed a draft community development strategy during the year under review. We have sought to finalize a discussion document on norms and standards for community development practitioners. We had community development endeavor to consult with stakeholders on community development norms and standards. We also sought to develop a program implementation and program funding protocol. We developed a draft model for community development practitioners during the national community endeavor. We now move to the critical area of youth. The goal there is to implement youth programs that assist youth to access work and participate in the mainstream economy, with the outcome being to reduce youth poverty. In that respect, we have sought to develop norms and standards for the Masupatsula Youth Pioneer Program. We developed the norms and standards for the program. We also developed an exit strategy for the Masupatsula Youth Pioneer Program. We also linked 791 youth to economic opportunities through their participation in the Masupatsula Youth Pioneer Program. We sought to ensure that manuals for the NYS program would be reproduced for conducting the National Youth Service Training Workshops and the development of provincial youth service programs business plans. In that respect, we finalized business plans for the National Youth Programs for Mpumalanga and recruited and trained 362 youth in the NYS program. 222 of those were in Mpumalanga, while 140 were in Gauteng. We graduated 51 youth and employed 69, and 69 were employed by the private sector. With respect to the profiling NPOs to deliver services to youth, we audited 110 youth NPOs and profiled 7 provinces, except Eastern Cape and Free State. I must say that these provinces that I left out have since been audited in the intervening period. We linked over 21,000 beneficiaries to development projects, and we also trained and capacitated 354 officials on the sustainable livelihood approach concept and the use of the toolkit for sustainable livelihood approach. We are still under sustainable livelihood. The intention is to realize the outcome of reduced household poverty. We sought to develop guidelines for establishing social cooperatives. We only developed draft guidelines on social cooperatives. We supported five provinces to establish food banks, that is Mpumalanga, Western Cape, Northwest, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. We linked 1,250 food distribution agencies with the food banks and provided an equivalent of over 16 million meals to individuals who needed that. We now move to slide 44, which is an area that talks about non-profit organizations and partnerships. We sought to develop an NPO management to develop NPO management guidelines, which we did. We also developed a framework for institutional arrangements and capacity for provinces. We finalized an NPO registration and compliance system and work model document, and we established a structure for NPO registration and compliance monitoring support. Still under NPOs, we developed a code of good practice for NPOs. We finalized NPO governance norms and standards document. We developed an NPO funding guideline, and guideline will to be implemented by all provinces during the current financial year 2011-2012. We developed a discussion document on the NPO policy, and all this, through all this, we seek to realize, to create an enabling environment in which non-profit organizations can be strengthened and sustained. We have sought to register 90% of NPOs within 2 months of application. We processed all the applications within the given period of 2 months. We sought to ensure that 25% of NPOs would comply with the NPO Act. 30% of such NPOs were in compliance with the NPO Act by the end of the financial year. We approved an NPO capacity building framework, and we implemented phase one of the framework throughout the provinces. We are now finished with program four. We now move to program five, slide 47. We'll start with the sub-program that deals with population and development. The goal that we seek to realize to enhance sector capacity and performance, as well as the realization of outcome two through a long and healthy life for all South Africans. We established a stakeholder database for CSOs and civil society organizations and faith-based organizations for assessing capacity building needs and population concerns with special reference to HIV, AIDS, and gender. We secured funding from the Health and Welfare Sector to train about 380 key stakeholders on integrating HIV and AIDS into development planning with assistance from Palama. With respect to the enhancement of social cohesion and protection, as well as contributing to the realization of a long and healthy life for all South Africans, we sought to ensure that we have a population trends analysis report on health factors with demographic consequences. In that respect, we consolidated and updated two individual reports. That is, one was an error of view report on HIV and AIDS and other health-related issues with demographic consequences, and the second one being the report on the status of health, morbidity, mortality, and development in South Africa into a single document. We sought population HIV and AIDS research to conduct a population HIV and AIDS research. We updated and finalized an overview paper on HIV and AIDS and other health issues with demographic consequences in March 2011. We have sought to conduct research and compile a report on teenage pregnancy in South Africa. In February 2011, ethical clearance was granted by the Human Rights Research Council to continue the research study on factors associated with teenage pregnancies in all provinces. We have sought to compile an overview report on the status of the youth in South Africa. In that respect, we completed a gap analysis concept data on service delivery for the youth in South Africa. We also sought to compile a population report on the state of gender in South Africa. We compiled and presented an overview paper on the state of gender equality, if Equity and the Empowerment of Women in South Africa in May 2010. We also contribute through our population unit to the goal of addressing and reducing poverty, as well as a number of outcomes, which are outcomes 7, 8, 9, and 10. We start to compile a report on integrating population policies within municipal IDPs. The Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, as well as the provincial population units, which are usually located in the provinces of the provincial premiers, approved a strategy for municipalities to roll out the guideline to integrate population information into IDPs. 8 local workshops were conducted focusing on the application of the guideline and the mainstreaming of gender into integrated development plans of municipalities. We sought to conduct population capacity building and training courses. We reached 200 government officials, including 2 members of parliament and 156 international participants during 6 different capacity building initiatives that were carried out during the reporting period. We developed an international population strategy, and it was being implemented by the end of the financial year. We now move to a special project office, which contributes to the realization of outcome 4, which is decent employment through inclusive growth, as well as the DSD specific one, which is an increased work opportunities, skills and income levels, building and improving income levels. We have sought to create 96,000 job opportunities through the current and newly integrated social sector programs, that is the extended public works program. In that respect, we created a total number of 110,753 work opportunities, which exceeds the set annual target of 96,000. And 61,322 of these were full-time equivalent. I'm on slide 52. We have sought to integrate EPWP indicators and reporting requirements into education, that is the Karigute Mass Literacy Program, and the National School Nutrition Program, and sports and recreation, that is the mass sports participation program. In that respect, we mainstreamed all the identified sub-programs into the expanded public work reporting system, and this has boosted the sector performance and ensured the creation of more work opportunities beyond the traditional pilot programs for EPWP. We are now on slide 53. We have stopped to ensure that we finalize the appropriate regulatory framework on conditions of service for EPWP workers. In that respect, the Minister of Labour approved the ministerial determination of a code of good practice for EPWP. We also completed a draft costing and modeling report on EPWP and presented it to the project management team for adoption. Still under special projects, we sought to align the MNE system of EPWP participating sub-programs with the web-based reporting system, and we integrated all participating sub-programs through the EPWP web-based monitoring system, which improved reporting outcomes for the social sector. We also sought to ensure that we maintain an effective and efficient management of EPWP institutional mechanisms. In that respect, we ensure that there was an effective operating institutional structure for the social sector EPWP throughout by the end of the financial year. We also have hosted an annual sector conference successfully in Mgungundlovu, also I think known as Peter Marsbeck, and regular steering and extended steering committee meetings were also held. We also sought to provide implementation support to EPWP sub-programs, provinces and entities. In that respect, we undertook regular troubleshooting visits to provinces and held bilaterals with programs to ensure achievement of targets as set out in the sector plan and the annual action plan for EPWP. We now move to social policy. The goal there is to institutionalize evidence-based policymaking in the department and the social sector in general, as well as contributing to outcome 12, which is an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. The department, through the social policy program, contributed to the development of a policy on social service professions. It also took part in the development of a policy on military veterans and the DSD contributions to a basket of social services for veterans as well. The program also participated in the further development of the anti-poverty strategy with partners such as organized business, government, labor, and NEDLAC. The department also participated in the CSA-led initiative on defining a poverty line for South Africa. In order to further promote evidence-based policymaking, The program conducted two social policy and social policy analysis training sessions for 50 senior civil servants working in policy development. We have sought to organize a regional training program and roundtable meetings, regional as in SADC in the Southern Africa region. In that respect, we conducted a social policy and social policy analysis course for high-level civil servants in the Southern Africa region, which was held in Swakopmund, Namibia, in October 2010. Countries that attended were Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, South Africa, Swaziland, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. This will enable us to realize the goal of creating a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. Thank you, colleagues. I'm done with program performance. I'll just simply move to now to the legislative program, which is just one slide.
Five minutes, okay.
Okay, the Social Assistance Amendment Act was drafted and taken to Parliament, introduced in Parliament during the reporting period. It was assented into law by the President in September 2010 and became an Act of Parliament. Regulations under the Children's Act were approved by the Minister and published in the Gazette and came into force on April 1st, 2010. Similarly, regulations under the Older Persons Act were approved by the Minister, published in the Government Gazette, and came into force on April 1st, 2010. We have international engagements as well, through which we seek to promote a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. And in support of South Africa's foreign policy goals, the Department plays an active role in promoting the country's social development agenda internationally. In that respect, the Department continued its active membership of the African Union, SADC, and UN structures, which includes, among others, the UN Commission on the Status of Women and the UN Commission on Narcotics. During the reporting period, the Department successfully hosted a number of international delegates who were on benchmarking excursions, and they came from as far as India, China, Kenya, and Tanzania. I'm on slide 16. The Department continued to lead consultations on the social dimensions of NEPAD on behalf of the Africa Group, the G77, and the G77 in the UN Commission for Social Development. The Department, through the Deputy Director General for Welfare Services, continued to serve on the Board of International Social Services. The Department, we also hosted a successful World Social Security Forum on behalf of the International Social Security Association, ISSA, and the four officials led by the Director General continued to serve in the highest decision-making structure of the ISSA. We also participated in activities organized by the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, and the European Union. We played a leading role in the finalization of the IPSA Social Development Strategy, which was adopted by heads of state of the IPSA members. The agreement with the European Union has been finalized after interactions with the Department of Labor and was ready for endorsement by the end of the financial year. Agreements with several neighboring states have been finalized and are at different stages of development. Collaboration with Zimbabwe on the critical issue of unaccompanied minors continued during the reporting period, while collaboration also continued with Chile and Mexico with a focus on social security, poverty alleviation, and early childhood development. And all these initiatives, in our view, have provided a platform for the Department to share experiences with fraternal organizations from elsewhere in the world. With that, I thank you, Chair.
The financing. And if you can take us straight to the programs where we are not performing well and the remedial actions that is put in place.
Thank you. The financial overview for the department in the previous financial year, if one looks at slide 53, we've managed to spend 98% spending on the 95.9 billion allocation that we had in the previous financial year. If one goes straight to the different programs, one would see Program 1 and Program 4 is our support services programs. They haven't achieved the 98% spending rate, but if you look at Program 2, 3, and 4, that is basically our service delivery agents or program that we have. I just want to highlight maybe Program 2. The saving that you have there, 1.8 billion, mainly relates to the social grants. That's on the basis that we advanced the SASA regions, and then at the end of the month, and the recon us, and then they say what is the amount that they haven't paid. For Program 3, almost 99% spending, only a small underspending of 4.2 million. Program 4, community development, or 98% spending, 4.6 million underspending. Maybe let me go to the different programs that we just want to show. Let me skip Program 1. Our underspending, I just want to highlight there, is that we've only achieved 60% spending on our capital, although the amount is 1.8, might be insignificant, but that money relates to the payments that we had to do for the minister's vehicles. We had some delays for the delivery, and we could not pay it before the end of March. The others are mainly just efficiency savings that we've implemented. If one goes to program two, one would see there's underspendings under goods and services, 12.4 million. That mainly relates to our appeals unit. There are some projects that could not be finalized before the end of March. If one look at slide 72, the next slide, one would see what was the type of projects. It was the visual training center, the MIS, the call center. It was also the digital pen solutions. These were the projects that could not be finalized and was requested for rollovers to this financial year. And then also the bulk of the 1.8 billion relates to the grants, as I've mentioned. For Program 2, there's nothing real significant in terms of Program 3. Again, maybe just because of the low spending on capital, it's 28% spending. The amount is really significant, it's 800,000. But that mainly relates to also IT equipment that was ordered but not yet delivered before the end of March. Under Program 4, again here, the one I want to highlight is under the transfers and subsidies. The amount that you would see there, the 1.6 million, there's two transfers that we could not transfer before the end of March, relates to the NAPWAN and NAPSA. We had some compliance issues with these institutions, so that amount has turned over to this financial year before we could be transferred. Chairperson, that's for Program 5, it's also the support programs, the 93% spending. The main issue there is again on the capital assets. As I've said, we've ordered a lot of equipment prior to the end of the financial year, but due to delivery, payment could not be done. The other is basically hundreds of savings that we've implemented for our goods and services. So efficiency savings that we've implemented on our traveling and subsistence and those kind of things, and compensation is more normal, your turnover of staff. I think that's it for our outlook. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, for the year under review, the department received a qualified audit opinion due to the scope limitation that was occasioned by the non-existent and incomplete files relating to social assistance beneficiaries. And this was the second year in a row that the department received a qualification based on the same opinion. Despite the significant improvements that were made during the financial year, an amount involved that was basically the basis for the audit opinion was still above the materiality level set by the Auditor General. And then the main reason for the qualification is because there is dual accountability, that the relationship that exists between the department and social assistance and SASA on the social assistance grant payments. This flow of funds arrangement is basically also resulted in the excesses of measure that is resulted in the audit report issued by the Auditor General in the previous financial year on the annual financial statements. And the status of the relationship therefore resulted in the actions of SASA having an impact or negative impact on the audit report of the department on social development regarding the matters concerning the social assistance expenditure. And in addition to the normal audit that the Auditor General performs on the department, the department is actually mandated to achieve internal control objectives through the dashboard that is issued through to the minister. And then these drivers of the internal control seeks to achieve the clean audit administration. So in a specific element relating to the achievement of internal controls objectives related to leadership, the Auditor General reported that the oversight responsibility of the department does not focus on the detail of the operational function performed by its agency. And therefore, these accountability lines between the department and SASA are not clearly defined, resulting in uncertainties on responsibility and accountability. Slide 84. The following was basically the basis for the audit opinion that was issued by the Auditor General in the particular financial year. And then I'm quoting from the audit report from the AG. I was unable to satisfy myself
as to the occurrence of social assistance grant expenditure, which with an approximate value of 891 million in the 2009-2010 financial year, it was 10.5 billion. In the previous financial year, 2010-11, it was reduced to 891, as disclosed in the note 8 to the financial statements. Due to the limitations placed on the scope of my work by the SASA, who acts as an agent of the department, a number of grant beneficiary files requested from SASA were not presented for audit purposes. Furthermore, numerous files presented by SASA did not contain the necessary information that is required to form the basis for a valid granted payment. The agent's records did not permit application of alternate audit procedures regarding the social assistance grant expenditure.
It's okay, you don't have to.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Give us a summary.
Okay, that is fine. And then the plans to address that audit opinion is that SASA put together in the 2010-11 financial year a three-year plan to address the limitation relating to the scope that the auditor general performs, and then in 1 year they managed to actually reduce that amount of misstatement from 10.5 billion to 891 million in terms of, and then they improved into the registry management of the unit. And then in addition, SASA is expected to actually report on a quarterly basis to the audit committee of the social development to report on the progress made in implementing that plan. Slide 86. The other matters that we highlighted as emphasis of matter related to the presentation of financial of information, performance information, as far as the usefulness of information, the reliability of that information is concerned. And then plans to address the matter relates to the fact that the department has actually revised its annual performance plan to ensure that adherence to the strategic planning framework of the National Treasury is actually addressed. And then all the items raised by the Auditor General in the management letter in terms of the objectives and the targets have actually been revised for the current and the outer years. Then the other matter that was highlighted is also a matter of emphasis on slide 87 related to the environment amount that was submitted to the National Treasury together with the annual financial statements that were not signed off by the accounting officer. The plan to address that is that we have put together a checklist together with the standard procedures relating to compliance matters, and this is managed within the office of the CFO on a quarterly basis starting with the current financial year to ensure that all compliance matters are actually adhered to and the necessary signatures are also obtained before submission. And slide 89, the matter relating to oversight in terms of the internal control objective, the oversight responsibility by the department over SASA. The plan to address that is that the department has revised its governance oversight framework over SASA specifically to focus on the operational matters other than performance information. This also meant that we need to consider beefing up the internal audit capacity to also perform audit samples on social grants expenditure at SASA in collaboration with the SASA auditors. In addition to that, we have joint audit committees to look into to strengthen the oversight responsibility. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And thanks for that detailed presentation. And in the last interaction that we had with the department, I know the DG went into details to try and to share with us the interventions that has been put in place to address the SASA situation. And maybe if you can just brief us when you respond to the questions, brief us on the progress around that this issue. And members, Minister, in September, October, SOP visited Greytown. Yes, we spent a week there. And we made some observation in some of the areas there, more especially the informal settlements that we visited. The situation was very, very bad in those areas. And the challenges that we identified when we visited is that the poor relationship between the officials from social development and the councillors, because we asked the councillors how are they trying to assist those communities. They said no, they do report to the service point, but there is no positive response from the office. And also another observation that we made is in that area is that it's overpopulated. It looks like a dump, actually. And there's a lot of rubbish around there, and there's a lot of youth and women who are not working in that area. And we try to check whether there are any other activities like projects or community development programs that are running in the area. There's absolutely none. So if the minister can please make a follow-up in this area, and there were lots of children who are not receiving grants in the area. But we also raised the matter with the Home Affairs because it was a result of the certificates that are not existing to those children. And I'm going to start from the end there and come up. Greytown, there are informal... It's right in Greytown. There are informal settlements, the minister. Yeah. In Greytown, minister, there are informal settlements around the Greytown town. Greytown town. Honorable De Villiers, I'm starting from you. You are honored today.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Can I see your hands then? Yes. You'll follow Honorable Faber, or follow Honorable Makache, Honorable Plaki, Honorable Nube, Honorable Whip. Yes. This is the last one. If you are ready, Honorable De Villiers.
I think I must use this one. Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, in connection with page 14 on the document of presentation, we can see there that there's the number of the actual payment of the different grants. Now, my question is actually on that situation. The people or the I don't want to call them beneficiaries, those applicants who apply for these grants, are there some of them already filled in their forms, and how many are actually now currently outstanding? You got that? Can I just repeat?
Yeah.
Some people did already apply for a certain grant, say for an old person's grant or disability grant or foster child grant. Now, those applicants who still need an answer from the department, if they do qualify or they did not qualify. Got the question now? Right. Then the second one is in connection with the social workers on page 16. Now, on page 16, the department stated they are scholarships of 5,574 students and 1,177 social work students graduated and are absorbed into the employment in the provinces. Now, is in that 5,574, that also includes the first and second year and so on, just for my understanding. I don't think this needed to answer that question. Then on the provinces on page 17, I can see the completed situational analysis in four provinces. That is the Free State, the Northern Cape, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. Now, what is the situation of the other provinces which are not mentioned here on this page, especially in connection with this you mentioned here? Then the audit and the partial care on page 25. Completed audit program in four provinces, namely Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Northern West, and Gauteng. Maybe it's in Northwest, not Northern West. Northwest. Yeah, Northwest. Now, I'm very much interested in what is the situation in the other provinces. Are you busy with the other provinces in this connection, or not? And then the food banks import, page 43. I think last year, I'm not sure, but last year there were also some provinces who did not have food banks. And to my memory, those provinces are still outside this situation of helping them to establish a food bank in the provinces. If I'm correct, what is the situation there? And then, Chairperson, my last one, I will hold the others for the second round. My last one. Excuse me?
No, okay.
I'm okay, thank you. The challenges of the provinces' experience to implement the Children's Act. What challenges did they come forward? They have in the different provinces. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to leave my colleague because he's still got a lot of questions here.
but you know, Madam Chair, as we are representing provinces here, and as I'm looking through all these programs, I was trying to actually SMS my MEC, Alvin Boetes, to find out what the hell's happening. Because my problem that I've got is the Northern Cape. And, you know, I see program after program after program, and it is KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape and even the Free State. But I don't know if Alvin actually knows about this, because do we actually have a social grant for the Northern Cape? Is there a budget for us? Because I don't see anything for us. I'm actually quite worried, because a lot of these programs don't include the Northern Cape. And it seems if there's no social problems, I don't believe that. So I actually wanted to know the exact budget that was given to the Northern Cape social services percentage-wise, and if that's actually fair against what we see in these programs, because except if they just, by some or other mistake, left out the Northern Cape in the print here, but it's only on the audit where I think I saw the Northern Cape, but the programs, I didn't see the Northern Cape, and I'm actually quite worried about that. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to go into other things at this stage.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think today I'm going to be very short. But firstly, before, I should just maybe through thank SASA in my province through the social development as is an entity that at last they've advertised, and the closing date was 2 weeks back. But I requested them that we should not wait for a year before the appointment. So I think it's a move in the good direction at least. Chairperson, my question is under spending, particularly on Program 2, Comprehensive Social Security. Yes, the reason for the underspending here, according to the report, is because of the low intake. But I'm more interested, because we cannot just say this is low intake. What are the reasons that led to the low intake? What are the challenges so that we got that? The other thing is that I'm not a scientist, and I'm not much into this. Sometimes when we ask questions, people will say, according to the scientific research and all that. I don't believe in that, because I'm just an ordinary man, who's doing work on the ground. I fail to get the strategy from the department to assist, you know, or an exit strategy, so that we avoid the issue of being dependent on this grant. For example, the issue of the disability grant, the underspending there, one of the reasons is because of the temporary disability, people who were there on temporary disability. But you ask yourself, what happens after that? Because sometimes it's because of the review when doctors say the person is now okay, it should be, then the department will remove that person from the system. but what chance do we have to assist them, you know, as an exit strategy so that they don't become dependent on the state grants. The other thing is around this one, really, I need to be empowered, Minister. This issue of household intervention, you know, I'm raising this because I think from my province, when one wants to know exactly what is happening, they're very douchey about this. Because my experience is that you'll visit a household and they will indicate that they've been bought a fridge and malamogodu. You ask them, do you have a quotation of the price for this? You know, it's like somebody, you know, they're taking advantage of that. Because when I research and check with others, apparently that household intervention, it entitles a household for 15,000. But when you check, you know, the things which are bought in that house for that family is less than 15,000. I need to be empowered. What is this? So that when we do our oversight, at least we are empowered. The other question, it will be around Northwest. the other thing is around food banks. I'm becoming worried now, DG. the other thing is around the issue of food banks. One is more interested to know what is this and how do we ensure that our communities, you know, they become part of this. Because one of our objectives is to reduce poverty. And to maybe to take this step further, that this special, I don't know whether it's this special project, where you find that the schools where we've got needy kids, the social development will buy them like your uniform. But my problem is that, you know, in most cases, these school uniforms are bought from well-established companies. Don't we have more like programs or to encourage provinces to encourage, because we do have, you know, like your women, the people who can do this uniform, that at least in the province we have something like a warehouse where they will do these uniforms, put them there. If there's a need for a particular school to get uniform, and then we know that we get those uniforms from that center. In a way, this will also assist, you know, in job creation. I think those are the questions that I wanted to
thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I hope you will pardon my voice. I'm just sick, Chair, but I will try to. I think it's Mutu for sure. It should be Mutu. 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 I've got just one question to the teaching, and one would be to ask for clarity. The question is, DG, what serious impact does the provincial and entities' financial accountability has on the social development financial statement? And if there is any impact, how do you intend to overcome it? That's what I wanted to check. And because, you see what, I will just say it in short. We were in the provincial week. I asked the MEC a question about the entity, which is SASA. Then she said, no, leave SASA alone. She's our baby, and she's still crawling, and all those stuff. My colleagues can bear testimony. But I said, if an institution that is an entity that is tasked to be at the service point of the people can be referred to as a small child crawling, need to be pampered and all those things, how are you going to achieve what you intend to achieve if you're doing that? That's what I wanted to check with the department, because to me, I told my chairperson that I am not satisfied about this explanation. In page 82, DG, there is this amount involved was still above the materiality level as determined by the AG. I just want to know what does this mean in that last bullet in page 82. If I can bullet, the last bullet in page 82. So these are the only questions that I had to share. Thank you.
Let me start with the health and safety measures or safety and security measures, something of some sort. Now and again in Gauteng, you have a home that is burnt and the senior citizen become victims there. I know other homes are partially funded or whatever it is. What I want to ask is that what are the measures of enforcement when an NGO or ING applies to say I want to establish a home, and then in paper I qualify, but in practice, what are the measures for monitoring compliance in terms of safety and security? It often really happens in Gauteng, homes burning. The other one is we were at Ngqothu last week, and there were a lot of complaints by people with disabilities to say when they go to the offices, they normally don't get assistance. Fortunately, we had a mobile outside. So the minute they say this, we refer them outside. So there's, it's personality cult or attitudes. I think there has to be some program of trying to deal with the attitude of the workers to treat everybody with dignity. The other thing also that one had in Ngqothu is the question of, I'm not sure how wide is the dissemination of information to the employees on the Social Assistant Act. Many people also that I listened to go to were talking about they apply for 2 years or so and not get, there's nothing that they get. And when we are here, we're told about the Social Relief Fund. But there, at Ngqothu, they were saying, we don't get anything. And the other one also that is addressed in the Act is the question of the employees to respond specifically to an applicant to say we are short of this information, we are short of this information. And what we had at Ngqothu was not that. It's just you are not, go back, there's something short. They go back, they come back again, there's something short. There's no clarity in terms of what is the criteria and how do you qualify. The other one is on the internal controls. The Auditor General talks about the legislative reporting lines which impede on the department's oversight. And you also are reporting the duality of the reporting of the SASA. And in your intervention mechanism to say, you indicated that you have put in place the review mechanism on governance, tightening your internal control. And I didn't hear anything in terms of, is there any process of amending, if it needs to be, amending the legislation so that you play a clear oversight, the DG plays a clear oversight over this entity. Yeah, let me just end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, in absentia. let me first start by making or commending the department, firstly on the social workers, that you promised that you'll be training more. We needed more in our areas, and that has happened. Maybe what can be sent to us is the areas where they have been deployed or where they are appointed, so that we can see which areas really still need, because we come from different constituencies, and we might be able to work with those people from our constituencies. We must know where they have been taken to and see if assist the department if there are still serious needs for such people to be deployed into those areas. And the other thing again, having Ms. Mube having talked about the attitudes of the employees or the officials, I really think that so far you have done good, because we can realize the capacity building courses that you gave to these employees shows that there was a proper need analysis made. And unfortunately, we will always have those people, even after being capacitated, will remain with their attitude. So that says the department must make a serious monitoring in all their offices where people should get assistance, because it's only about attitudes. You have explained many capacity building programs that you have done with the officials here, and that is a good sign. But now it doesn't end there. There is a need for us to continue to make sure that we didn't invest for nothing. I mean, capacity building also talks of money used. So we need the product to do that particular way, especially even on this one of the budget, because, you know, our people there in the rural areas have lost confidence in the system, in the justice systems. But if they are maybe advised by the officials when they go to their offices, the officials in social development, when they go to their offices about these processes, it is going to be much better. Maybe they will start to realize, because really the justice system is seen as for those, the elite, and they can't access it when they have problems. Even this one, I must, as I say, that this one of having to reapply because of he has been terminated for a particular period, there's a serious improvement out there about the what do you call that, that process where they reapply, and there is, yeah, the review, whatever, yeah, that, okay, the appeals, whatever, that there is a serious improvement out there. So I just wanted to start there and say we commend you for what you are trying to do. Although there is this big animal that cannot be really trained, which is the SASA. I mean, last year, in the previous one, when you came in, you told us of the interventions. All that time they were saying they don't even submit files and so on. I think DG here, you must just develop the road violators and maybe come up with a legislation as Honorable Mube has suggested. We can continue to be, you know, on the right track, assisting our people, and now SASA is not complying, in some way it's not complying, and it's an entity that takes the whole department down, you know. We cannot continue to see qualified audits when we see so much work being done with our own eyes in the different areas, but we still find that you are getting qualified one. Develop road violators, DG. Yes, Leanja, what is road violator? I see next, Yasha. Okay. And maybe the other thing is, I don't know if we have that, you know, maybe we can get sometimes the reports of your MINMEX. I'm not sure if I'm getting into your work too much. Because why I'm saying this, at this level,
you tell us of what you are doing, and we, but when it goes to the provinces there, we are not very sure of what is happening. Something that is decided at national level, it's not implemented well in the provinces. And like Honorable Mahate was saying, that the MEC said, leave it, it's our babies crawling, when you have interventions here. So it's like, okay. So I'm not sure if we can have access to the reports of the MINMEC, so that we see that this issue was tackled in the MINMEC. Now, why are the provinces not implementing? That can assist us a lot. Now I'm coming to the last part where I say prioritize on this. We have been talking about these things. They are very small things, but they have an impact. I was happy to hear on your road shows, Honorable Minister, about the plight of the older people. You know, now we are getting towards Christmas. If you go to those pay points there, people, I don't know what we can do. I think previously we suggested that we have, I don't know, you need to work with the police somewhere. I was just telling my other people at home that I'm going to come with a camera. It's a pity every time in my area when they get their grants, I'm at work here. I wanted to go there with a camera, and some few people should point to me in a hidden way, all these machonis that are harassing our old people. This is a serious thing. The old people no longer have their IDs with them. They come there every time, they must get somebody, give the ID, go and get your money from there, and then as they come out, the money is taken, the ID is taken. And these people are not registered anyway. That is my main problem, and I think something must be done, especially in those deep rural areas. Something must really be, especially where they don't even have a hall inside. They queue from outside. Our gokos, you know, can't move away from this machonisa, and they are actually ripping them off. So in welfare, what we are trying to do, caring for older persons, but they are still this. The second one on older people again is the welfare at home. Last time we talked about it and said, what can be done to make sure that this assistance that they are getting as a grant from the department should also be assisting them at home, not to be given to other people. And as soon as they have put their fingers there and they've got the money, it's over with the old people and they are suffering at home. You know, I'm talking about things that I see in my constituency. And it's very important that something must, I don't know what can be done, DG, but at least somehow, Uguchiman, please stop what you are doing to the older people. The last one is on we still have patients, very sick people. I know it's not only social development, health is there. We suggested it last, do something about it. We know you are working on a program where everybody will get their money from their banks and so on. But there are still very sick people like HIV and AIDS patients still sleeping on the floors waiting for their pensions, you know, to go and get their disability grant. And it's painful to see them, watch them with your eyes sleeping there because they need that disability grant. I don't know, DG, just come up with some plans how we can help our people on the issues that I have raised. Chairperson, let me stop there. Thank you.
Yeah. Lastly, the Department of Basic Education also tabled its own annual report to us. They indicated that there's an integrated program for early childhood development that is running between DSD and also their department. So we'd like to know from your side, how do you see it progressing, that program? Okay. Then you can respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe to start with early childhood development, we are running a campaign and we're focusing on the rural areas. And over a period of 3 years, we want to ensure that we fund 3,000 more early childhood development centers. And then education is looking into the issues of training of caregivers. But what remains the biggest challenge is that we are a building of structures of ECD centers is not the responsibility of social development. It is the responsibility of local government. So one other challenge is that ECD, early childhood development, is not the responsibility of the government. It is run by NGOs. And we've said that education is the apex priority of the present government. And if you say education is the apex priority, you don't start looking for the results at grade 12. That's too late. You need to start at the ECD center or at early childhood development. And in other countries like Brazil, they start during pregnancy so as to ensure that the child develops properly. So we've presented that we're going to, but we've agreed to form a committee, interministerial committee, that is going to include basic education, higher education, social development, and local government. But I think, and health. But I think the DG will add on some of the issues. And then the issues of prioritization. For instance, the payment of grants to very sick people. During October month, we visited Msinga. And in one household, we visited a household of mentally deranged people, almost the whole family. The husband or the man is getting a grant, and then he is supposed to review. And actually, it's like the grant has been stopped. And then when we went to him, because social workers asked us to go and plead with him to go and review, and he said to us, you know what, the one who decided to stop my grant will reinstate it. And then that said to us, we had a discussion that we are very rigid. If social workers can go to a place and find a person, he's living, he's there, why are we not going there to review and do everything in the family? Because that person is not going to review. We promised transport and everything. He said, okay, that's fine. But when we're just about to leave, he said, the one who stopped it is going to reinstate it. So with the issue of older persons, for the review, we've agreed that we're going to start reviewing the 75-year-olds and upwards in their homes. And that can work two ways. We can be able to monitor the treatment at home, wellness and everything. But we want to improve, maybe start at 70. And I still think we need to find a way of ensuring that money goes directly to older persons, not to proxies. Because if we can go to the homes of the 75-year-olds and above, we need to be thinking of how we are going to improve the system. About the issue of SASA being a baby, I don't know. But I think we're going to give an opportunity to the CEO of SASA just to give us a synopsis of what improvements we're trying to put in SASA, because we have tried to come up with a radical program that is going to look into the issues. MINMEC, I suggested to the DG that we should invite the chairperson of the portfolio committee and the NCOP to our MINMEC meeting. So as from now, we'll be inviting both the chairpersons to MINMEC, because I know before, for instance, housing used to invite the chairperson to in MINMEC so that you can have an understanding of what is going on. But also, we're trying to look into the possibility. We are already in the process of trying to form a council because MINMEC is a talk shop. You are not forced to implement decisions that are taken at MINMEC, but education and health, they have a council, and then decisions taken at the council are binding. So we'll be going to cabinet to present our proposal, and it's not going to be difficult because there has been other departments who've gone through that process. The issue of amending legislation, I agree to that, because we don't have to depend on the good relationship between the DG and the CEO. Right now, I think there is a good relationship between the DG and the CEO, and I think that is going to bear fruit. But also, I think social development, we have a responsibility of entities oversight, and that is where we need to strengthen ourselves as social development, so that we can be able to do our work properly, so that even if we don't have legislation yet, but there must be a way of trying to ensure that we work together. And for instance, submissions that come from SASA right now, they go through the office of the DG, they go to entity oversight, go to the office of the DG, and then come to the minister's office. So we are trying to improve the relationship. The issue of attitude and social workers pushing people from pillar to post leaves much to be desired. We are trying our best, but also what we are trying to do now is to reduce papers that have to be submitted when you apply for a grant. Mm-hmm. We were at 20, and now the CEO likes to say 5.5. We are now at 6 pages, and we still want to have a fewer pages, so as to also contribute towards environmental changes that are taking place throughout the world. In-house, I think here we were complimented, so we don't have to also, it was a remark, and we want to thank members of the committee for complimenting us of the work we are trying to do. The issue of the AG, finance people are going to explain it. Firstly, it was the, and I still think it's the way they are now doing their work. For instance, they work on the basis of a sample. If they go and take 200 or 2,000 files, and out of those 2,000 files, 500 don't have information, the figure comes out of the sample. But I still think we need to improve, and the CEO is going to also report about what we're going to do to try and improve the system, and we are automating. 15,000 rand, I think we need to have a discussion on that. Because I've never heard of a situation where we have to buy refrigerators. household intervention. I'm not sure about that. So we need to have a proper briefing so that we give proper responses. Because you know, we have what we call social relief of distress, and it is equal to the amount of the older person's grant. Yes. So this amount, I don't know what's going on. And if you have an intervention, why should you buy for the people? Because you give them the amount and give them restrictions on how it is used, and then monitor how the money is used. You can't decide to buy a refrigerator for them, not unless in Cuba they buy all the yes, they buy the furniture for their people, and it's in their legislation, so they know what to do when they do that. And I think we need to look into that. And the issue of projects, we are trying to look into that, and programs of taking people out of the system, of out of poverty and out of grants. We are looking into that. It's not very easy,
yeah.
But we think we'll be able to implement it together with a zero hunger program. And the issue of buying uniforms from a project, it is possible.
Yeah.
It can happen. So we are also going to try and look at it, because during the October month, when we went to areas, we used services from communities, and it's possible. And even finance people have a way of trying to ensure that we follow proper procedures, but we use services from communities. And even if they use plastics as their flowers, they are used to that, we use those plastic flowers. If they are tablecloths, a bed sheet, it's fine. They are used to that. As long as we have something that is going to empower people, because we don't want to land, have a bigger events like helicopters, and when we go, we leave poverty where we've been through a social development. And we're going to look into problems that we identified in Greytown, and maybe if we could get a report of the issues that were raised in Mutu, so that we can deal with them. I know when we went there to launch the survey as social development during the HIV and AIDS month last year, there were issues that were raised, and ECD issues were also raised, and we're trying to make a follow-up on those issues. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Minister. Thanks very much, Madam Chair. I will deal with some of the questions and still leave others for my colleagues to deal with. Perhaps I should, well, the Minister has already dealt with the one on getting MinMet reports. But I think it is, and the Minister has touched on this point, it is in the nature of MinMecs that they are collegial forums. The decisions they make are said to be gentlemen and ladies agreements. So we have already started with a draft legislation that's going to set up a council. The Minister has already touched on this as well. The idea is to try and make sure that those decisions are binding. But there still remains a doubt about the extent to which there may be a conflict with that legislation that establishes the council and the intergovernmental fiscal framework, which allows provinces to decide on their own what they want to do. So there is tension between what we seek to achieve and the space that provinces are allowed by legislation in their provincial councils to decide how to prioritize and so on. And that some of the decisions that are made in MinMec might fall outside the scope of what the provincial council determines to be priority. So that tension will continue, even after we've set up a council. So I thought I should mention that point, because we're not oblivious to it. There were specific matters raised. Honourable Member Blackie asked about what serious implications do provinces and entities have in how they, on the department, in how they handle their matters, including finances. Provincial departments are in a separate sphere. They have their own accounting officers. What they do or don't do impacts on their own financial statements, and they take full accountability for it. And the same would go for an entity such as the National Development Agency, which is a Schedule 3A entity under the Public Finance Management Act, in respect of which Parliament appropriates specific resources to be transferred to them. And they take full accountability for it. But in the case of SASSA, there are two pots of money. There's the administrative budget estimated, I think, in the amount of about 7 billion rand. That is for administration. That money is appropriated and understood to be one capable of transfer to SASSA. Then you have the big pots of money, about 90 billion rand or thereabouts. That money is appropriated to be administered by SASSA, but it remains in the books of the Department of Social Development. So it's not money to be transferred to SASSA. It is called transfers to households. It is transferred to households by the department. But the interesting relationship here is SASSA contracts your third-party contractors. You know them, CPS, AllPay, MPLearning. And SASSA would have data every month with regard to how many beneficiaries are on the system and how much is payable to them every month. So it would give that information to us, and then we transfer that money, not to SASSA, to the payment contractors for them to disperse it. If SASSA, in their administration of FARS, doesn't keep documents properly and so on, it doesn't impact on their financials. It impacts on the financials of the department because the big money is in our books. We have an interesting situation this year where SASA's financials are unqualified. Unqualified. The department's financial statements are qualified because of what SASA did not do in the administration of social grants, the keeping of funds. Now, that's a minefield. We've debated this with the Treasury, we've debated this in SCOPA, that the solution lies in the flow of funds being changed. By that we mean, at the point of appropriating this money, Parliament must make it possible for the 90 billion rands or whatever the amount is to be transferred to SASSA. But the Treasury is unhappy about this for whatever reason. But one of the reasons they gave us is that in government's books of accounts, and which accounts are held different from those of agencies and in a sense accounted for publicly, what they say is that it's not good to have on government's accounts 98 billion rands or whatever amount, or 89 billion rands, appearing only as a transfer to an entity. Because that's all it will be. It will be that entry. And the view is that it probably would be better if, in the books of government, you see a transfer to households rather than a transfer to an entity. Because SASSA's books are then kept separately from those of government because they are a public entity. So if it remains in our books, it still makes government look as good as it should. But the consequences are as I've outlined. So we're trying to find ways and means of dealing with that. But in the meantime, we're focusing more on working together with SASSA to get to a point where the systems are jacked up, SASSA is able to keep proper files so that when the AG conducts audits, they find that everything is in order. Because on the department's financials, other than the grant money, our books are in good shape. And I'm sure the AG would have shared that with you
if they had the opportunity to present to you. So the biggest snag is with regards to the grant money. Now, Honourable Member Plaki also asked about the materiality figures. In 2000, or in the two financial years ago, the figure that was extrapolated was 10.2 billion rand, based on the on the limitation of scope that I experienced. But this is worked out as a percentage of the total population of beneficiaries. But they base it on the sample that's been taken out of the body of files. The materiality figure for the year under review is about 600 million rand. Johnny, you can correct me. SASSA brought the figure down from 10.2 billion to just about 900 odd million. Or is it 89?
Yeah, it is correct.
Yes. So marginally above the materiality figure set by the AG. But we should not be misunderstood to think that 600 million is not a lot of money. It is. In fact, there shouldn't be a cent, one cent that we are not able to account for, even from the point of view of limitation of scope. But the AG had said, if it were there, they wouldn't qualify us for that reason. But of course, it would perhaps appear as an emphasis of matter that requires us to take certain steps for continuing improvement to be demonstrated in that specific area. So the matters relating to amending the legislation asked by Honourable Member Ngube relate to that specifically. Now, the AG uses language that sometimes is less helpful, and I'll say this with all respect. I know that in the original draft they had this language of dual accountability, which is what appeared in the other financial year. And we argued that, in fact, this is not dual accountability. It is, in fact, the lack of dual accountability that is the problem, rather than dual accountability itself. Because you have two people who have a role to play in respect of mine, but only one of them takes accountability. And the sense is that if only one takes accountability, the one that knows will face no consequences, have the greater temptation to simply let go and just focus on what is important for them. But if we had dual accountability, then we would definitely make sure that we work together, because if any one of us falters, we both take the rap. So, but that's not what we've got. So, but I'm hoping that we will continue to interact with the Office of the Accountant General to find a much better solution to this. But what the AG has complicated the matter with, as you will see in our audited financials, they say that the department has not focused on the operational internal oversight or operations of SASSA, and this is a reflection on leadership in their books. Now we have challenged. They hold a different view. I don't know how long they will sustain it for. Our view is that oversight, by definition, and in all corporate governance parlance that we know, oversight is exercised in respect of performance. You don't exercise oversight in respect of operation. You manage operations, you don't exercise oversight over them. And that operations are the responsibility of SASSA executives, not the department. Otherwise, if we have to exercise oversight in that way, we effectively have to run SASSA.
we can't be in the space of operations, but we should be in the space of making sure that they perform, they meet the targets they've set, rather than getting involved in the day-to-day running of the organization, because that's what operations means. And this is a matter we've debated with them up to SCOPA. It definitely will be a matter SCOPA will continue to take interest in this year as well. And we will see how far that will go. Madam Chair, I think that perhaps at this point I should pause and give my colleagues the opportunity to deal with the various questions of programmatic detail. Should I start perhaps with Dr. Mabetta on the extreme right end of the state?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DG and colleagues. I'll respond to a few questions that were asked. The first one was on the scholarship as to whether the 5,574 number of students includes all the levels. Yes, it does, from first year up to, you know, fourth year. And we will send a list of the newly graduates who have completed and have been deployed by the provinces in the different areas, because the qualified social workers, newly qualified social workers that are on the scholarship, have to be on contract with the department for 2 years before they can be free to go and work anywhere. And with regard to the situation analysis on the community-based services for older persons, why it was done only in four provinces, that was the initial, you know, part of the we started in those four provinces and we'll proceed. The directorate that is responsible for this is continuing with the situation analysis in the other provinces this year. This applies to the audit in other provinces. And Northern Cape, you know, Northern Cape is quite vast. So they always, you know, require us to have a firm date with them before we can come, so that they can also coordinate and get the officials from the furthest points to be able to attend our briefings or training. And most of them take place in Kimberley. And as and when we do have the time, we also go to the different districts. I think that's one area. We have always had a problem with them to find a convenient date for the briefings that we have to do with them or the training. But most of the time we do get there. For example, this the briefing on the Children's Act and on the programs on adoptions, it was done in this financial year. Western Cape also, Western Cape, they had their own training on the Children's Act, but we did go this year to do the national part. The challenges with regard to the implementation of the Children's Act that have been experienced by the provinces. The Children's Act comes with new provisions and new requirements for resources and especially human resources. For example, there are certain chapters of the Children's Act that requires that the department must fund certain services 100%, that the department must provide this. And so the provinces are slowly adjusting to that. The Treasury has increased the budget of the provinces as far as, you know, the implementation of the Children's Act is concerned by almost twofold. In 2005 and 2007, I think the budget of the provincial department in totality was 1.5 billion. This year it's more than 3 billion. So there's been an increase in budget, but it's still not sufficient. We have, you know, challenges with regard to the implementation of the new provisions for foster care, transformation of child and youth care workers, the registration of ECD programs inseparate from the registration of partial care dropping centers. So those are the challenges, but we are addressing them with the provinces. We meet on a regular basis with the provinces to look at how each province has got an implementation plan, and now and then they deal with, they inform us how they are dealing with the challenges that they have. Which is the old age homes. Old age homes, before anyone can operate an old age home, especially in accordance to the new Old Age Act, the Older Persons Act, the home must be registered. And in registering that home, we look at the norms and standards, whether the person who's running the home is adhering to the norms and standards that are in the legislation. We register the program, but we are also very interested at the assessment of the structure by the municipality.
Okay.
Yeah, so we work together with the municipality. The home will not be operational until the municipality has okayed the structure to ensure that, for example, the structure is solid, the roof is okay, there are fire extinguishers, the electricity, the wiring is done properly, and accessibility and evacuation, you know, prescripts are adhered to. So we remember with that home that burned this year the municipality had assessed it and gave the report to the home that there are certain things that they need to change. Electrical wiring there. And I think the fault came from the electricity in the home. So, but we are now going to assess all the almost 44 older persons' homes that have been found to be at risk. We do condition assessment of the structures, and together with the municipality. And then we will never ever register a home until they've got that certificate that says the building is free for occupation. Was that all? Yeah. I think those were all the questions that were directed to me.
Any other
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members, DG, colleagues. A few questions were directed in respect of Social Security. The first one was, are the numbers given in the report on page 16, numbers of applicants or applications? I'd like to indicate that in the annual report, we only give an indication of the number of people in respect of whom we pay benefits. Or it would represent the number of benefits, rather, so that when there are, say, for example, 2.6 million elderly people, those would be the number of people receiving the old age grant. In earlier years, we used to give under the name of beneficiaries, but then if a caregiver would have three children, we gave it as one beneficiary. But what we've done in later years is to indicate how many people actually receive the benefit. We do not report on the number of applications, which may perhaps be useful because it gives an indication of the demand, but we do not report on that. And in respect of the appeals as well, we do give an indication of the number of appeals dealt with. A second question asked relates to the under expenditure in respect of the grant. I think there are a number of factors at play here, and part of it is good. Members will remember prior to 1995 and SASSA's establishment, provincial budgets came under strain quite often, and they then stopped processing applications because of financial challenges. That has not happened since such an establishment. In part, the budgeting process is more rigorous. We've always had enough money in it. But I think there is
to some extent, I dare say perhaps, budgeting on the safe side so that when we introduce the age equalization, the estimate indicated to us that we would be getting 450,000 elderly men into the system between the ages of 60 and 65. That has not materialized. In fact, in the reporting period here, we indicate that only 283,000 elderly men came into the system. So it would appear that there are elderly men out there who should be qualifying for the benefit in terms of our estimates. So we budgeted for that. The second factor, again, to budget on the safe side, we raised the means test quite significantly of the old age grant by 10,000. We expected about 100,000 new elderly people to come in with income below the new threshold. Again, it would appear perhaps we should have done better on the communication side. The same goes for the child support grant extension. Initially, the estimate was 750,000 children, but to date, as the numbers indicate, we've covered about 323,000. So I suppose on the supply side, we may need to make, or SASSA need to make bigger efforts in communicating the benefits out there, getting to communities who are entitled, or members of communities who are entitled, who are not getting the benefit. A fourth area that is very important perhaps to note is the dealing with fraud prevention and detection has become an institutionalized activity in SASSA. We run, or at least SASSA run, data comparisons between itself, Purcell, and other institutions so that they regularly remove people who should not be on the system. Add to that the issue of reviews has also become institutionalized so that people, especially temporary disabled people where the numbers have declined quite significantly over the last 5 years, people are now constantly reminded of the need to be reviewed, to update their information in respect of whether their income has increased, and of course, in the event of death, grants are stopped much earlier. Third response, perhaps, and the Minister has dealt with it, but I think it may be necessary to make the point that in respect of the question around dependency that we often get, and I'll be probably very brief today on that topic, but we need to bear in mind that the grants are paid to elderly people who are not going to be in employment again, to disabled people who find it difficult, even if they weren't disabled, to get into the labor market as a result of structural unemployment challenges, and certainly to children who are in poor households. Again, many of their parents do have an income, and the grants are there to supplement it. To think that we create new dependency is not quite correct, because poor people are often dependent on other poor people. If we decide that we don't want to make them dependent on the state, as some people argue, then we need to bear in mind that the taxpayer foots the bill, so it's a society sharing in redistributing wealth, and it's quite a normal arrangement in even wealthy countries. And then the final point is, we cannot actually exit people who are not going to be part of the labor market, in any case, because they are children and elderly people. Chairperson, perhaps I should leave it there, unless there's one or two other questions that I have not responded to. Thank you.
All the questions been
answered? No, Mr. Homer, I need to cover the one on the Mashonisas. There's one on, if I recall, and I've left it for you deliberately, Mr. There's something to do with people who are frail and able to go to the pay points. Can't we have something else done there? Or is there anything already being done? At least those two.
Yeah, I think in part, DJ, on what Chairperson, the Minister has indicated that there's a new approach by SASSA in beefing up what is called customer care, and that is to visit the homes of elderly people over 75, and that's going to be expanded, as the Minister indicated. The second part, of course, is to explore our payment
mechanisms and options much better. Part of this include where people can to get the benefit directly into bank accounts, to spread the accessibility of payment options such as PayPoint, so POS, point of sale devices, etc. And then the last part where the public service and administration is coming in terms of outcome 12 of government, and that is to roll out the norms and standards in terms of accessibility throughout. Now, SASSA probably has the best footprint of all government institutions, the widest, but even then, there are areas where we do not meet those norms and standards, and there's our working together between the presidency, public service, and administration department to increase the accessibility. In respect of the loan sharks, MINMEC has considered this issue in serious depth and raised the issue about the exploitation of the elderly by loan sharks who are illegal operators for most parts. We've undertaken work in respect of it, working together with the National Credit Regulator, and there's a lot of quite revealing facts around it, one being that many of these illegal operators are in fact involved in other underground illegal activities of which the loan or lending part is part of those businesses. But on the other hand, many of them are in fact subcontracted to legal loan lending institutions. So the legal lending institutions would send them out and allow them to then operate outside of the law. The response in a strategy put together by the department and considered by MINMEC is one, prosecution, collecting evidence and prosecuting people. And this we've seen in the Eastern Cape about a month ago, where people were arrested. This intelligence gathering is ongoing between the NPA, the Hawks, and the National Credit Regulator, and will result in many, many more arrests. Second part is education. Beneficiaries need to be assisted on the one hand to know that lending at exorbitant fees will land them into a debt trap. But the other part of it is to help them to get access to some form of counseling. Of course, for middle-income people, debt counseling is an expensive exercise, and so we need to explore that. And thirdly, tied in with the threat that many elderly people are within their own households is the process of social mobilization and exploring for the poor over time, something similar to what has been done in Bangladesh's low-interest rate micro-lending. But that's going to be a long-term. Part of the strategy has already been implemented by SASSA, the Hawks, the NPA. We've also met with the security cluster about a month ago, and the police and the NPA and the Hawks are right behind this initiative. The one thing that we may have to do this time, which we didn't do 3, 4, 5 years ago, is to have a very sustained campaign over a longer period of time. Thank you, Chair. DJ.
Yes. Madam Chair, this first one or two questions for Mr. Nitschbaum.
Thanks, Chairperson and the Honourable Members, the DG and colleagues. There was a question about food bank. What is it? Where is it operating? Food bank is an approach where food that are donated by big retailers are stored in one place and distributed to the needy family. In our context in South Africa, we had an organization called Food Bank South Africa that we had a relationship with in the past 3 years. That came to an end last year. We are presently reviewing a strategy to better the approach that will also include not necessarily getting donations of food from Pick and Pay and others, but also to get food from our own small farm holdings that they can be sent to one place and distributed appropriately. It is also in line with the new approach which we are working with the Department of Agriculture on zero hunger strategy. As for now, there's not any other progress in terms of what has been done because we are working on a strategy so that we implement appropriate food bank system in the country that empowers the majority. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's just one question, maybe the only question Honourable Member Faber asked today. I think he was bemoaning the fact that the Northern Cape doesn't seem to feature anywhere. And I've been going through this presentation quite meticulously to identify slides where references are made to the Northern Cape, where specific activities have been undertaken in the Northern Cape and not in other provinces. The slide number 17 is one such, where the Northern Cape is referred to specifically when we talked about the situational analysis of community-based care services. Slide number 27 would be the next, where we're building capacity for implementation of programs that aim to strengthen and develop families. Number 28, where we're on a number of anti-drug and alcohol initiatives. In fact, I may just say that this is a summary. There are a number of activities. There have been interventions, for example, during the floods under disaster relief, where interventions have been made, and the Northern Cape was one such area where interventions were made. But I was just illustrating the point, but I accept the fact that I think perhaps the general principle here is that once we have maybe piloted something in other provinces, in our reporting we should say, what are we doing then to roll out countrywide, so that honourable members are able to see that the provinces that they represent are also being touched by the programs that are being rolled out. And that principle we note. And we will make sure that every time we report on these matters, we give an indication as to what the rollout is. And in fact, some of these will find that we're reporting now, 9 months into the new financial year, but we're reporting on what has happened until March. We find that in the meantime, some of these programs are being rolled out, but that's not what is covered in the report that's been presented. So I thought I should just mention that, Madam Chair. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. At this stage, I'm going to allow members to ask only one question.
Yes.
Because of time constraints, and no opening remarks, no preamble, nothing, straight to the question. Where should I start now? Where I started? Okay, whip. Then it will be far, but then it will go up like that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You make me think of that advertisement where the lady says on the aeroplane, I only want to hear one click, and they put the safety belt on. Yes, I just want to know from the DG, the programs that are there. I'm not talking about money being spent. I know there's been money spent on the flood, etc. What my concern is if I look at the programs itself, I would feel like I don't see in the financial report on these specific programs that we've been mentioning. I would like to know the percentage per province, because we don't see that in the financial budget. So that's what I want to know. On the specific programs, the amount of money, the amount would also be great, but if I can see the percentages towards each province, because that can give me indication if my province has got a fair deal or not. So it's not that I'm saying there's nothing there. I do know that there was the drought relief years ago when we had drought, and now I know we've got the flood damage. Thank you, DG.
Yeah, I was so quiet there.
One question
only. Chair, on page 143 of the AG's report, under financial reporting framework, the AG is saying the financial reporting framework prescribed by the National Treasury and applied by the Department is a compliance framework. Thus, my opinion would have reflected that the financial statements have been properly prepared instead of fairly presented as required by section 20 subsection 2A of the PAA, which requires me to express an opinion on the fair presentation of the financial statements of the Academy. Can you explain what is the AG saying here? Why he cannot express his opinion on the fair presentation on the fair financial statements? Maybe we have to couple it with the opinion he gave from page 181 to 186 in the AG's report, where he is referring to those financial statements that he cannot express opinion on those financial statements from page 181 to 186 in his report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Honorable Moussa.
Chairperson, through you, I just wanted to clarify my question. And then we'll see. I've got only one question, but I wanted to clarify because, Chairperson, when I asked about the exit strategy,
mm-hmm.
one knows very well that you cannot take the child out of the system. But my question is related to where you've got a community which are getting this, you know, the grants. And one would expect that the department should be having like programs, you know, to go there and encourage those people that with the little that they're getting, they can establish or start a program, like for example the bakery, you know, then that it will assist to exit them from the system. Because in most cases you find that they're getting whatever that they're getting, but it's not meant for what it's supposed to, because they abuse that with alcohol and all that.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I was referring to, because you would expect people who are very progressive to go and advise communities of what best they can do with the little that they're getting. My question is around also under underspending. According to the report, National Association of Burial Societies of South Africa and NAPO, it's one of the issues, because they've not been paid, you know, that led to underspending. What I'm interested in is that what are the plans that the department is having to ensure that these organizations comply, because they didn't get what they're supposed to get because they didn't comply. What are the plans to ensure that in future they comply?
Okay. Honorable Wright, you have a hand up?
No.
Okay, yes. Honorable Wright.
Madam Chairperson, it's not a matter of asking, it's a concern that I want to raise in the issue of the older people getting their grants from the banks. That's a good idea, maybe, for them not to go to a lender, a seminary to go and get their grants there, but I've got a concern because I don't know how the department works with the banks, because it's the same. They stand outside in long queues, raining, sunny days, windy days. There is no shelter for them. For me, the concept of them getting their money from the banks is good, né? But the manner in which the people are in which this is implemented is it's a pain to see a grandmother standing in Alwal North along M6 waiting for this queue that goes into Absa Bank or whatever bank. Fanele abaleke ezamoto zibaleka phakwa M6. I mean, what can the department do to avoid such things? For them not to get hurt, for them not to be exposed in bad weather conditions. Chairperson, you said questions. It's a concern. It's not a question. And also, I want to ask from the lady: does the norms and standards that apply to the older persons, places of safety, are they the same with the children, the children that are being placed in the in the safe places of safety, because in our areas where the children live, it's just unsafe. Electricity together with the building. Thanks,
I'll start with a request. The minister talked about the education being the apex in ECD. And when you ask from the education, they say that responsible from age 6 or age 5 to 9. Now, maybe, what does it mean then when we talk about the apex? And then they will say, no, Tina are responsible for curriculum, the grade, whatever, for curriculum, but other things are yours. So we need them to understand, to say, what does it mean? Let me go to the leadership. To say, DG, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced the arm's length that the department is doing. When we go to the PFMA, they talk about the internal controls, CFO, Azumukon CFO. The internal controls. And put the measures of minimizing the risk. Here is these billions given to the department, and then you transfer this money. I will call it, for my own understanding, the third part, this service provider, which is Angiti Sasa Yona. Yeah, those CPSs, but a person, according to you, DJ, who accounts is SAS. Where we come from on the CFO to say this is a lot of money given to different third parties with no mechanism of minimizing the risk. So if the Auditor General says there's a lack of leadership or paperwork and whatever, I think from my own background, it might be saying, because you would want the quotations, just that paperwork. I think you need to ensure that there is paperwork that will substantiate the to say why does this CPS want this, for whom and whatever. Then after that, they must account in terms of how was the money spent. So I think the tightening of your mechanism on the risk part of it, they need to be put. Then that will be the part of Juan, without even getting to e legislation. But also, I think it's a general measure, because even the language pencil, it's also the same thing. You don't want to account to the department, and there's a mess in terms of this one. So in I think also we have to also put pressure. What I will ask that you strengthen your role in terms of there must be accountability, in the sense the measures. You know, strengthen your risk mechanism. Thanks.
Thank you. Mine is just a comment and something that needs to be looked at. In cases of when Ms. Honorable Rancho spoke about the queues, what I have observed is that, like, I know the post offices, I haven't seen it in the banks, where these people go and get their grants. There are specific days that they have to come. They even divide it according to age. To say, between this date and this date, we are paying those between 25 and what, and even for the old people like that. So I don't think it's assisting, because I thought
when you open an account, you can come in at any time to get your money. So there is that thing that is happening. I don't know whether it's how it should be done or what. Because if you don't come on the day in which you have to come, mm-hmm. then you forfeit the money for the whole month. You'll get it. Oh, no, not the service forfeit, but you cannot get it for that month. You will only get it as a double in the next month on a specific date. That is what is happening in our post offices. And it is written there. Today, it's this day, it's for this one. Child, whatever, grant, this day, it's for this one between this age and this age. If you miss it, you have missed it. So something must be done, because that is, I thought that would be a relief, because everybody can go to the post office anytime and get his money, but it's not what is happening. Thank you.
Did you, on the Children's Act, there are cases of abuses that we have identified and convictions. When I was doing oversight with the magistrates, there was a report that in Richmond, in KZN, there's a number of human trafficking or children trafficking that is taking place in that area. I'm not sure whether it has been reported to you, aware of it. If not, I think we need to do an investigation in this area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me try and deal with this last set of questions. It seems that the acting CFO, our CFO is still with us, is out of the country on training. So Mr. Mudiba is acting on his behalf. He might be able to shed some light on whether we have information on the percentage of provincial budgets relating to programs in social development. We perhaps what needs to be understood is that money for social development in the provinces doesn't come from the National Department of Social Development. It forms part of the equitable share. The exports in the provinces are the ones that decide how to divide that money. It's not decided by the National Department. Yes. But there is information available somewhere, I'm sure, in government. I don't think we have it today, which we can extract from the provincial treasuries even and share it with the committee as to how much. Or do you have that, or you do have the information? Perhaps why don't you deal with that and then I'll deal with the others.
Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair, DJ, honorable members. For the provincial, what we do, we get in reports on a periodic basis in terms of the budget and expenditure. And then for the current financial year under review, 2011-12, the amounts that were basically allocated in total to the provinces is 11.7 billion, with a Northern Cape allocation of 520 million, which represents 4.3% in total.
Would you like to speak to the interpretation of the language of the AG in those specific pages?
Okay. Thank you once again. The question asked relating to the auditor general report is reflected on page 143 of the annual report relating to financial reporting framework. Is that the National Treasury, as the mother body of financial management in the country, prescribes certain provisions or regulations relating to financial management or standards that needs to be followed. So they have prescribed the cash basis of accounting, which all government departments need to follow. Now, the Auditor General of South Africa is not in agreement with that regulation that has been prescribed by the National Treasury, and all departments actually have got this item, which has been classified as an additional important matter that we need to take cognizance of. So they prescribing, they recommending a different standard in terms of, you know, as a basis of accounting that needs to be applied in government. So this matter has actually been reflected in annual reports of the past because of that disagreement with the National Treasury. So had there been an agreement between the National National Treasury and the AGSA, the opinion, the audit opinion of the Auditor General would have been saying the financial statements are properly prepared, instead of what they currently are saying now, to say the financial statements are fairly presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. If we can proceed to matters relating to the National Association of Burial Societies and NAPO, from my Honourable Member Montaigne.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Members, DG and colleagues. The question was relating to what plans has put in place. I think it is a norm, first of all, that if the one of the requirements to transfer funds to organizations is that they need to comply to the procedures that are set.
Yes.
One of them is that quarterly and annual reports and audited financial statement of the previous year before you transfer to the next year. And also ensuring that there is that accountability and responsibility within this organization, despite the good work they do. On the other side, that is something that needs to happen. In the case under review, I think they were too late to submit those. And what we did was to meet with them together with finances to try to go through the necessary things that they need to go through. One of the contributing factors was that some of the members that were responsible resigned from the organizations, and some of them were new. So we have to take them through sort of so the training is just a capacity so that they are able to adhere to that. And then that's why we didn't transfer those funds. Secondly, one of the role of the Department of Social Development under Program 4 is an issue of community development, where we do profiling, identify vulnerable people within communities, and also above that, we then establish projects like food gardens, towers, beehives. So such throughout the provinces, there are a lot of projects, and they also link with the issue of trying to remove the burdens of those grant beneficiaries to have something to do, so that they should not solely depend on the grant, especially the children's grant. A list of those projects are available. We can send it over to the members, the province. We also link up with the NDA as one of the responsible. I think together, the aim is that we ensure that we link those beneficiaries with the projects so that they can do something for themselves.
Yes, and Mr. Chahoma, there's a perennial question of the and the queues, even if now the banks. Although I'd just like to say that as far as I'm aware, an account that is open in the post bank is no different from an account open with a commercial bank. And once that account is open, money can come in there. You don't have to come and collect it on that day. It is deposited into your account, and you can withdraw it at any time. But if there are post offices that say, if you don't come on this day, you'll only get it next month, that would be wrong. But this is something perhaps we would like to discuss further with SASSA. We will accompany SASSA when they come to present the annual report. Some of these questions, I think, can be best dealt with on that occasion. Mr. Chahoma.
Yeah, maybe I should apologize. In wanting to be brief, I really just touched on it, but I think it's important perhaps to indicate that dealing with the issue of pay points and queues and the associated challenges that goes with government having to provide shelter, ablution facilities, etc., is not an easy one to fix. We're paying benefits at SASSA at 9,900 and odd pay points on over just 15, 16 days of the month in various communities. And as a rule, we need to rely on local government. government infrastructure, whatever is there. So the solution for us lie in saying we've got 9,900 papers, we've got challenges in them. Use the more than, it's about 9,000 ATMs and bank outlets that exist and continue to grow, including the 700 pay points, and then along with that, stagger benefits so that people don't all come on one day. In addition to that, we need to increase the access points and years. This is where the financial charter comes in, which the Treasury and civil society and businesses agreed upon, that the access to banking facilities continues to be extended. And I think the model that SASSA would probably present here once they have agreed in terms of the tender would take the country forward in terms of a better payment system or model, as it says, but it's not going to be solved overnight. It's not an easy one. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Members. The question on the register, whether the norms and standards that apply to the facilities to older persons apply to children. Yes, they do. It could be different norms and standards for children because the needs of children are addressed differently from those of older persons. We have every organization that is running a child and youth care center has to be registered with the department in accordance to the norms and standards that we have for the program that they are running in that center. The municipality also, it means once you have a building, you have to go to the municipality to get a registration for the condition assessment to be made of that building and for you to get a certificate. Just like when you build a house, you go to the municipality. Before you can occupy the house, you must have an assessment and a certificate that you can, operate in that building. The unfortunate part is that we've got many unregistered child and youth care workers, and more are sort of, use the word mushrooming, at community level, and they are not registered, especially those that are funded elsewhere. Those that are not funded by the department are not known to the department. Some are funded by overseas donors and some by, the local business. We have a problem with that. The department is intending to do an audit of all child and youth care centers, including those that are funded by the department, those that are not funded by the department. We still have an unfortunate situation where social workers, due to lack of facilities, that they'll refer children to those centers that are not registered. That's a known fact. The minister wants us to do a quick review audit of the safe houses around Khayelitsha and so on. We were shocked by what we found, that some of them have been operating years in a shack, very unsafe, they use paraffin and very unhealthy conditions. But we after that audit, we'll have to come up with measures on how we can. If you can't close down, that's the problem. What do you do with the children? It must be a process when you move children from such a facility to a registered one. But we are aware of the problem and we are addressing it together with the provinces.
Yeah, thanks very much. If you have exhausted all the questions, shortly.
Okay. That looks like my colleagues would rather field those questions. Would you present Mr. Matasa?
Thanks, DG. There was a question raised relating to the internal controls that the department can actually implement as a measure to control the expenditure of grants. I'm gonna try and attempt to answer the question. It's a difficult one. You see, in terms of the relationship that we have and the Social Assistance Act and as well as the department, the role of the department is basically to perform an oversight in terms of the operations of SASSA, as the DG has indicated earlier on. So the money for the right beneficiaries and so on and so forth. So the challenge is not with the reconciliation between the payment contractor in terms of what the department is allocating to the payment contractors for household expenditure. So the challenge is with regards to the registry management in terms of ensuring that that each one of the applicant, you know, for grants have a file that is actually supporting, you know, the expenditure that is paid overall by the payment contractors. So our role is to ensure that we strengthen that oversight to ensure that the mechanisms that SASSA is putting in place and so on and so forth is actually in place. And we're doing that through a number of initiatives. One of those is basically like the requirement that they need to report to us, you know, through the audit committee on a quarterly basis in terms of implementing some of the measures that they're putting in place and the challenges that the Auditor General has raised. Another one is we on the process of, you know, basically finalizing a memorandum of agreement, which basically stipulates the protocols, the reporting requirements, the communication regarding the some of the activities operations in SASSA. I think that is basically some of the issues that we're dealing with in the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and DG. Over the issue that's been raised relating to an exit strategy for social grant recipients, there are very, very important explanations that do need to be given. The first main one, Honorable Chair, really has to do with the fact that that challenge is bigger and broader than the responsibilities of the Department of Social Development only. It really has to be understood and seen in the context of everything that government does. Now, as Mr. Jehoma earlier did state, we pay our social grants to children and older persons. Older persons and children account for 87% of the total grants that we pay. That is excluding people with disabilities. Now, we cannot expect those people to work. Therefore, if we say that those grants create dependency, we have to be able to answer the question on whom. That then it will mean that these grants are paid and are not used for the intended purposes. So the other big issue really that we do need to look at in this context, which is why I started off by saying this is broader and bigger than the Department of Social Development. It relates really to the social and economic challenges that this country is facing. South Africa has got a very, very high unemployment rate. Therefore, there are no incomes that are coming into households. The second aspect of it as well is the issue really of the income threshold. Let me use the child support grant as an example. The child support grant, when you apply for it, there's an income threshold that is applied. Currently, that income threshold is the value of the grant times 12. Therefore, we have lots of people in South Africa that are employed, receive incomes, but those incomes are low. So those people still have jobs, and they also will qualify specifically for the child support grant, because wages in South Africa, generally in certain specific sectors, are very, very low. And that is one of the big problems that this country is facing. And then also, when you look at the profile of those who receive social grants, about 99% of them are women. All over the world, when an income into a household is given to a woman, you are guaranteed of positive outcomes, particularly for the children in those households. So there's a very strong correlation between providing an income to a woman and the positive benefits for the rest of the members of the family. Now, further to that as well, there are women who've got very, very low levels of skills. They cannot be absorbed in the labor market, and they've got very, very low levels of education as well. However, the department, as Mr. Nishikwale did indicate, has not folded its hands. We are attempting to link households with members that receive grants to economic activity. For instance, training local small-scale projects that Mr. Nishikwale referred to, the NDA, the Expanded Public Works. When we say that in the social sector we created about 66,000 jobs, those jobs are concentrated in areas where there's prevalent poverty in the country. Also, the issue of
institutions that are there in the whole country, there is this very, very specific contribution that the Department of Social Development is making. Now, Honorable Chair, take for instance, we would like to see yourselves, Honorable Members, looking into, for instance, when you look at the Department of Housing, the Department of Housing builds houses. Often the tender is given to one single person. However, if the requirement was that when those projects are undertaken, local communities are skilled at the completion of that project, you need to hire skills on bricklaying, on carpentry, on plumbing, on electrification. And these people can then be able to get absorbed in the labor market in the country. The last point is that currently the Department of Agriculture is leading quite rigorously a project that's going to cut across the whole of government, i.e. they are bringing up small-scale farmers, and it's going to be compelled and imposed upon government to procure, whether it is schools for school feeding schemes, hospitals, prisons, old age homes, etc. They're going to procure from those small scale farmers to ensure sustainability over a long time. In short, Honorable Chair, I did think that it's important to really highlight that it is really a problem that is bigger than the Department of Social Development. However, we are making important contributions in that area. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Let me thank the department for the informative information and also the vibrant interaction by the members of the committee. And we also appreciate the fact that the department, when we raise issues here of importance, the department makes sure that they either programmatize those issues that we have raised or they make follow-up or report to us back. And I hope that the issues that have not been responded to and the promise that you will provide us with an additional information will be also followed. Yes. Then we'll meet you next time with the staff if you are available. We'll confirm it with you.
Vijay, let's talk. I have a case.